Welcome back for another deep dive with us. This time, we're going to be taking a look at a case that you might not have heard of, but it has some pretty big implications for antitrust law, especially if you're working on mergers and acquisitions or anything like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's Weyerhaeuser Co. v. Ross Simmons Hardwood Lumber Co. And it sounds a little dry, maybe. But trust me, it's a lot more interesting than it sounds. And we're going to be talking about predatory bidding today, which is basically,
interesting.
Can a company get in trouble for being too good at buying things? Can they corner a market by outbidding everybody else for, you know, essential supplies for their business?
Yeah.
So to help us break it down, we've got an antitrust expert here.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, this case really gets to the heart of, you know, what's fair play in a competitive market? You know, how far can you go to win?
Exactly. All right. So before we get into all the legal stuff, let's set the scene here. Okay. Picture this. Pacific Northwest. You got these huge forests, right? And you've got two lumber companies that are, you know, they're battling it out.
Yeah.
You've got Weyerhaeuser, the big guy on the block.
The 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got Ross Simmons, kind of the scrappy underdog in this whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, just to give you an idea, by 2001, Weyerhaeuser controlled about 65% of the market for alder saw logs.
Wow.
So that's a pretty significant chunk. I mean, that right there, that's a red flag when it comes to antitrust, you know? That much market share gives you a lot of power.
Sure does.
And on top of that, you know, the market for lumber was really volatile in these years between, say, 1998 and 2001. You know, saw log prices were going through the roof. But then the prices for the finished lumber were actually dropping.
Oh, wow.
So you can imagine it was a really tough time to try to run a business in that kind of environment.
Yeah, I can see how that would be really difficult to kind of, you know.
Yeah, razor thin margins.
Yeah, exactly. And it sounds like for Ross Simmons, it pretty much was a nightmare scenario because they ended up going bankrupt, right?
Yeah.
And they pointed the finger directly at Weyerhaeuser, claiming that they were engaging in this predatory bidding, you know.
Right.
Driving up the cost of the saw logs just to squeeze out the competition.
Right. Basically buying up all the logs that Ross Simmons needed to make their products.
Right. Right.
And they think, hey, they're doing this just to put us out of business.
Yeah. And they actually won their case initially.
Yeah.
To the tune of a $78 million judgment.
Trebled.
Yeah. Under the antitrust laws.
Yeah. So big stakes here.
Huge. And that's, I mean, that's really why this case is so important, because it gets at this really complex issue of predatory bidding, which is kind of like, you know, it's like a cousin of predatory pricing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we all kind of, I think, have a pretty basic understanding of predatory pricing. You know, you slash your prices so low that you're taking a loss,
right?
Just to undercut your rivals. But with predatory bidding, it's a little bit different.
It's on the other end.
You're trying to drive up the costs
for
your competitors. So you're making it really difficult for them to even get the supplies that they need to make their product.
Oh. So it's almost like, it's like a war of attrition, but instead of fighting it out on the, you know, on the sales front, you're fighting it out over here on the
supply side.
Supply side, yeah. Trying to bleed them dry.
Exactly.
I like that. But the thing is, how do you prove intent, right?
Right.
Like, is the company just being really good at negotiating?
Right.
Or are they intentionally trying to, like, manipulate the market?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And that's what makes these cases so difficult.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to get inside the head of a company and figure out what they were thinking when they were making those bids.
Right.
Were they just trying to get the best deal, or were they trying to knock their rivals out of the game?
Okay, so that brings us to a really major turning point in this whole case, which is whether a precedent that was set in the Brook Group case should also apply to predatory bidding.
Right.
And Brook Group was dealing with predatory pricing. And this test basically set a really, really high bar for proving that predatory pricing was actually happening. So the Supreme Court had to decide if that same logic also holds up, in this case, in a bidding war.
Right.
So can you walk us through, like, what that Brook Group test actually looks like? What does it actually involve?
Sure. So Brook Group basically laid out a two-pronged test. First, the plaintiff has to show that the company that's accused of predatory pricing is actually selling their product below cost.
Okay.
And second, they have to show that they have a dangerous probability, that's the language they use, a dangerous probability of recouping those losses later by becoming a monopoly.
Right.
So basically they have to prove that this whole scheme actually makes economic sense. You know,
right.
They can't just do it out of spite.
Right. Yeah. You can't be just like, I'm just going to destroy you.
Right. They have to have a plan for actually making money in the long run.
Right. Okay. So those are, I mean, those are two pretty tough conditions to meet.
Yeah.
But how did the Supreme Court actually apply this to the Weyerhaeuser case? Did they see predatory bidding and predatory pricing as basically the same thing?
That is the question, isn't it? And that's what we're going to dig into.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're going to dig into when we come back.
So that's where it gets interesting, because the Supreme Court basically said, yep, predatory bidding, predatory pricing, they're cut from the same cloth.
Mm.
They're basically two sides of the same coin, you know? Justice Thomas, he wrote the opinion in this case, and he was saying, you know, look, both of these tactics are really just about trying to manipulate prices to get rid of your competition.
So the court wasn't buying the argument that bidding high for, you know, for raw materials is somehow totally different from selling finished products at a super low price.
No, not at all. They said, listen, it doesn't matter if you're operating on the supply side or the demand side, the goal is the same. You're trying to stifle competition. And you know what's really interesting? Justice Thomas even made this point about how high input prices, at least in the long run, could actually be good for consumers.
Oh, really? Explain that one.
Yeah, it sounds counterintuitive, right? But think about it. If a company is willing to pay top dollar for raw materials, that's going to encourage suppliers to produce more.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Right.
More trees.
More trees. Exactly. And when you have more supply, well, that usually means more competition.
Yeah.
Which ideally should drive prices down for everyone.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's like this kind of ripple effect. You might see higher prices up front.
Yeah.
But then over time, that increased production could actually benefit consumers.
Exactly. But the court, you know, they didn't just stop there. They also brought up this whole issue of, you know, we don't want to create these antitrust rules that are so broad that they discourage companies from, you know, from just being good at what they do.
Right, right.
Because if companies are constantly worried about, oh, if I do this, I'm going to get sued.
Yeah.
Then they're not going to want to take risks. They're not going to want to innovate.
It's like, you're too good at making deals. You're in trouble. We're coming after you.
Exactly. So it's a balancing act, right? You want to encourage competition, but you also want to make sure that everyone is playing by the rules.
Definitely. So how did the Supreme Court actually apply this Brooke Group test to this case? I mean, did they like tweak it all or?
Well, they pretty much stuck to the two prongs, but they explain, you know, how it applies to buyers.
Right.
So for that first prong, that below cost pricing, they said, look, the plaintiff has to show that the company was bidding so high for the raw materials that they were actually losing money on their finished product.
Mm.
Not just that they were, you know, paying a little bit more for the supplies, but that they were actually operating at a loss.
So they're saying if you're still making a profit, even if you're, you know, you're paying a lot for your supplies, it doesn't matter. We're not going to come after you.
Yeah. If you're still in the black, you're good.
You're good. Okay.
But then there's that second prong.
Right. Recoupment.
Recoupment. The court said you also have to show that the company has a real chance of getting all that money back, of recouping those losses. And to do that, they'd have to basically become what's called a monopsony.
Monopsony.
Yeah. It's like a monopoly, but on the buying side.
Okay.
So they'd have to corner the market for the raw materials and then jack up the prices, you know, to make back the money they lost in the bidding war.
Otherwise, the whole scheme just doesn't make sense, yeah. Right? Why would you go through all that trouble if you're not going to come out ahead?
Exactly. And in the Weyerhaeuser case, Ross Simmons just couldn't prove either of those points. They couldn't show that Weyerhaeuser was actually selling lumber below cost.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't convince the court that Weyerhaeuser had a way to recoup its losses by becoming a monopsony.
So this case that initially looked like, you know, Ross Simmons had a slam dunk, it ends up falling apart when the Supreme Court applies this stricter standard.
Well, yeah, the Supreme Court basically said, wait a minute, this is not how predatory bidding works. You're going to have to show a lot more than this.
Wow, what a turn of events.
And they completely overturned the original verdict.
Oh, wow. So Weyerhaeuser wins.
Weyerhaeuser wins big time.
So what does all this mean? I mean, what are the implications of this case?
Well, I think it's a really important case for anyone who's working in antitrust law, you know, especially in these areas like mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah. So how has Weyerhaeuser kind of shaped the legal landscape when it comes to these predatory bidding claims?
I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that. I mean, it's not like, you know, companies can just go out there and start, you know, like just bid whatever they want and not worry about the consequences.
Right.
But it definitely gives them more breathing room.
Okay.
It's not a free pass to just, you know, be anti-competitive.
Right.
But it does mean that if you're just, you know, if you're out there bidding aggressively for supplies, that in and of itself is not enough to trigger an antitrust lawsuit.
Okay.
Plaintiffs now have a much, much higher bar to clear, you know, to actually prove predatory bidding. They have to show not only that the company was driving up input costs, but that they were doing so to the point where they were actually selling their own product below cost.
Hmm.
And they also have to prove that the company had a viable plan to recoup those losses later on.
Oh, okay.
Down the line. So, you know, it's not just about punishing companies for being good negotiators. It's more about making sure that they're not using their buying power to manipulate the market in a way that ultimately hurts consumers.
Gotcha.
Yeah. And Weyerhaeuser also gave us some much needed clarity on, you know, how courts should look at buyer side market power, that whole monopsony issue we talked about.
Right.
So they basically said monopsony should be analyzed with the same level of scrutiny as seller side monopolies, you know, like, you know, the classic monopolies we think about.
Yeah.
So it's really about making sure that antitrust law is applied fairly on both sides of the market.
Okay. So it's about, you know, you're saying like leveling the playing field in a sense.
Exactly. But it also seems like, you know, like any big legal decision, there could be some, you know, unintended consequences down the road.
Oh, like what?
Well, for example, you know, if companies know that they have more leeway when it comes to bidding, couldn't that make it even harder for smaller competitors to survive? You know, the little guys.
Right, right.
Because the big companies might just say, well, you know, we can outbid them anyway, so why bother? Yeah. So it's a risk, you know?
So they're emboldened in a sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might be a little bit bolder, but, you know, overall, I think it's a step in the right direction towards a more sort of reasoned approach to antitrust law.
Right.
It recognizes that aggressive bidding can be a legitimate part of doing business.
Right.
But it also acknowledges that there's potential for abuse.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's all about finding that sweet spot. Right.
Yeah.
Encouraging competition, but also preventing anti-competitive behavior.
It's a delicate balance, it sounds like.
It really is. And, you know, like any complex legal issue, Weyerhaeuser left us with some unanswered questions. You know, like, for instance, how do you actually define below cost in a bidding war? I mean, you can look at the numbers on a balance sheet.
Yeah.
But what about things like, you know, opportunity costs?
Oh, right.
Those are harder to quantify.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder, too, like, does this precedent only apply to predatory bidding? Or does it also extend to other kinds of buyer-side practices?
Right, exactly. Like, what about wage fixing?
Mm.
Is that considered predatory bidding? It's a buyer-side practice, but it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it is.
So those are all questions that are still up in the air.
Right.
And I think we're going to see a lot more litigation as courts try to work out all the nuances of this case.
Yeah, it sounds like this debate's not over.
No, not by a long shot.
Well, that about wraps up our deep dive into Weyerhaeuser. Hopefully this was helpful in understanding the ins and outs of this really important antitrust case. I mean, whether you're working on mergers and acquisitions or just you're interested in, you know, what constitutes fair play in the business world, this is definitely a case worth knowing about because it really highlights how blurry that line can be between, you know, just doing business and crossing the line into illegal behavior. So thanks for joining us and we'll see you next time for another deep dive.